Hi, welcome to Offscript. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, we're taking a look at The Moment, the new Charlie XCX movie. This movie's cool, man. I'm warm on this movie. Not everybody's warm on this movie. I'm excited to talk about it, though. Andy's a longer Charlie fan than I am. I just kind of walked in blind. He knows a little bit about it. We're going to talk about it, tell you whether or not it's worth your time. We're going to take a look at Blue Moon. This is one of Richard Linklater's films from last year that we missed. It's award season. Lots going on. Ethan Hawke plays Lorenzo Hart, who is a song and dance man who helps write the lyrics for Oklahoma, and things are not working out. So we spend the whole movie hanging out at a bar with him. It's weird. It's cool. It's a big performance by him. Margaret Qualley's in it. Andrew Scott's in it. Stick around. We're going to take a look at some trailers from The Big Game. The Big Game, you remember, you know, the big sports game that happened over the weekend. For legal reasons, we can't say Super Bowl, so we have to just call it The Big Game. But yeah, we're going to take a look at those. We got a new Adventures of Cliff Booth trailer. We got some weird stuff. We're going to talk about some weird AI stuff. Anyway, before we get to everything, we need to talk about the news. Light news this week, fortunately, since we had the Super Bowl up. First story this week, Film Academy will no longer show Oscar-nominated films to members on the big screen. Every year things change with the Academy, but there's been some funny ones around screening rules this year, and this one sounds funny. What do you know about this, Mr. Draper?
So after the Oscar nominations come out, the Academy tries to put on screenings for the films that have been nominated, and they're going to stop doing this, which seems counterintuitive, but apparently it's because no one is actually going. None of the Academy members are going to see these. They say that they've averaged five people going to see these screenings that cost thousands of dollars to put on. And also they have a private like Academy streaming app for members. Yeah. And that's basically where most people watch these things. So there's kind of no reason to keep it going if people aren't going to show up to the in-person screenings.
I think the good news out of this was reading that they are going to try to mandate more screenings, right, for Academy members. I don't know if that was this story or a previous one, but they wanted to at least make sure people were watching films and watching them all the way through, because a lot of Academy members were just like speculatively voting. Sounds like a good change to me. I think I wish at this point maybe we just get a little bit more transparency. How about a website where I can just see every member of the Academy's names? How about that? You know what I mean? And we could see cool people in there like Keke Palmer and Ryan Coogler. And then we can also see weird people like, Harvey Weinstein and Jeff Epstein and God knows who. Like, I'm just, you know, at this point, like, what are we, why so much mystery around the game? Why not just tell us who it is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they've always talked about like releasing the vote counts. And I believe it's kind of weighted voting is as well. That would, I mean, scandal all around if we could see who voted.
You can't, for sure. I don't need to hang my hat on whether or not we can see the Oscars people, but good. It's a little weird that they're not going to, you know, movie theaters, but they can go to theaters if they want. Yeah. They just won't be hosting them. Whatever, for the people who don't show. Next.
Also, a lot of...
Oh, yeah.
Well, a lot of these had big releases. That there were people saying, well, you know, I can't watch Avatar at home. Avatar's still in theaters probably somewhere. Like,
yeah.
What else were you doing over Christmas? Like, go see the big movies. Like, these screenings are generally should be for the smaller films that you haven't seen, the international features, the shorts, those sorts of things.
Yeah. Really quick, I should probably just talk to you about this offline. Did you see? No, yeah, I'm just gonna bring it up offline. It's fine. It's not podcast material. Next story. Lawrence Fishburne is joining Scarlett Johansson in Mike Flanagan's The Exorcist. Mike Flanagan's Exorcist movie is shaping up into something special. There's something going on over there. And the last Exorcist movie, if you don't remember, from Universal, was kind of a wash. It came out a few years ago and nobody really went for it. It underperformed. Now we've got Mike Flanagan on the case. It looks like he's making something really cool. What do you know about this?
Only that the cast is starting to really shape out. Of course, the great Lawrence Fishburne adding to it, as well as Scarlett Johansson recently. So we're getting this incredible cast. I don't know what direction you'll go. The first Exorcist is such a masterpiece. But you have to try and capture that magic in a different way. Like, that movie is very much about its time, about like modernity versus kind of... ancient, not religion, but just practices and family. It's about certain things. There's themes, there's that kind of thing. Like, there's a lot in there. And so you need some of that in a modern, like, what's the modern version of that look like? I don't know, but that's what we need from that, along with A Gruesome Exorcism.
Yeah, we're big fans of Flanagan here on the podcast. We watched a few of his previous films. Big fans of Dr. Sleep, some of his Netflix work, right? Midnight Mass, Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, Gerald's Game. So it's cool to see that he's kind of getting his hands around something a little bit bigger, a bit more mainstream, right? And notably that it seems to be just kind of handed over to him. Like, after Universal tried to get this last movie going and it didn't really happen, they said, hey, you can write and direct, man. Like, we're not going to give you like a script. You can take this in whichever way you think is best, which gives him a lot of room to roam. He's bringing in some old favorites in the cast too. Check this out. We got Chiwetel Ejiofor, right? Who we just saw in Life of Chuck a couple years ago from him. Diane Lane, Jacoby Jupe, who's the kid in Hamnet, which if you saw Hamnet, very powerful performance from the young lad. I would assume he was likely going to be our exorcisee, the person, the child getting exercised in Mike Flanagan's Exorcist. I would presume.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. We already know this kid is good at screaming and writhing and producing an emotional response for adults. Scarlett Johansson's leading the cast. I don't know, man. Like, that sounds pretty good. It sounds like a pretty good Exorcist film. I don't know what exactly we're getting, but like, I hope it's, you know, and I don't know. I hope my man's really pushing the needle, because I know Life of Chuck was not quite a horror movie, but it was a King adaptation and it was a bit dialed back. Hopefully Exorcist, he's really, I don't know, really pushing it.
Yeah, I think you can put a lot in there. Incredible cast. Jacoby Jupe is as the doomed child.
Yeah.
I assume Scarlett Johansson probably playing the mother character. Yeah, it'll just be interested to see, because again, that original movie, it's about kind of spiritual warfare, which takes on a lot of different meanings. And there's, like I said, there's a lot of meat on there, and something that they've failed to capture in subsequent Exorcist sequels.
I'm a little worried about our monetization status on this episode, but I think I can briefly say Mike Flanagan's like top five kid killer in a movie. That scene in Dr. Sleep where they ice. What's his name? It's brutal, dude. It's brutal. I rewatched it not that long ago. What is that kid's name?
Jacob
Rose
Tremblay.
The Hat. Yeah, and her gang of goons like nab Jacob Tremblay in a van. Like, he's like coming home from baseball. He's got his stupid mitt. Oh God, they like tear him apart in a field. It's awesome. Yeah, man. And like, so I don't know. I don't know what's coming in Flanagan's Exorcist movie, but like, optimistic. I was pessimistic on The Exorcist, but like, we're getting some talent in there. Some things are happening, some rumblings, hopefully something good. A quick look at the box office before we talk a moment. Let's see. Send Help still doing good, I think, right? Sam Raimi fans still happy. Iron Lung still doing good. Melania doing poorly. What do you know about Annie?
Yeah, Send Help still at the number one spot 2 weeks in a row, has made $10 million domestic, $53 million globally. Really strong start for that movie. I was a little bit worried it would get ignored in the January dump, but it's doing really well. Really glad that that's going. In second place is Solo Mio. And if you haven't heard of Solo Mio, this is a Kevin James Angel Studios rom-com film where he goes to Italy. It's like the Kevin James version of Eat, Pray, Love.
Yeah.
Tuscany. A Tuscan side rom-com with Angel Studios. Second place. My God.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I would say Iron Lung continues to not dominate, but do really well. Did another $6 million over the weekend, $37 million globally. This is the Stream of Markiplier's film based on a game, made for $3 million, $37 million profit. I mean, that's a huge box office story.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed we didn't watch Iron Lung for the pod, but like I talked about it last week. Andy and I don't know anything about Markiplier. It's fine. I hear it's, you know, cool. I don't know. Maybe it'll come across us at some point when we're looking for something else to watch. I saw the poster for Solo Mio when I was walking out of the theater after watching The Moment this weekend, and did kind of the same thing. I was like, oh yeah, I kind of saw something about that, but like, don't really know anything about it. You know, I don't know. Angel Studios continuing to do well. Trying to not pay too much attention to them, like that weird kid in class. You're like, okay, yeah, like you're fine over there, man. Like, don't, you know. Anyway, that's the box office. Like, it seems like all eyes were kind of on The Big Game this week. That's what people were really looking forward to, especially Sunday, right? So a light week for movies coming out, which seems like perfect place for a weird movie like The Moment to kind of slip in. Huh?
Well, real quick, let me finish the finishing out the top five. A K-pop film called Stray Kids, The Dominate Experience, it's ATE in big letters, came in at 5.5 million, 19 million globally. I don't know anything about this movie other than it's a K-pop. Not to be confused with K-pop, Demon Hunters is some K-pop band doing really well. And then fifth place was the French Dracula, the Luc Besson film starring Caleb Landry Jones and Christoph Waltz, came at 4.5 million. Don't know anything about that. Might check it out on streaming at some point. Melania dropped to the bottom 10, still made a few million.
Yeah. Melania, we talked a little about Melania last week. I don't have much nice to say about it, so I won't talk about it. But Dracula, they should have just called it like French Dracula. I think it would have done better. Because like I walked by the theater and they were running Dracula in a theater. It was splitting time at my local Cinemark with some other movie. I was like, oh god, they can't even get all day screenings for this thing. Like it's got to share a screen. So I don't know. It's probably fine. Yeah, man, that's the box office. We should talk about The Moment. Looking forward to talking about this one. Andy's going to be taking the summary. Andy, please take it away.
The Moment. So this is the latest film from music video director Aiden Zamiri in collaboration with Charlie XCX, the pop singer. And this is a semi-autobiographical mockumentary. There's a lot going on there. Aiden Zamiri has worked closely with her on a number of music videos, like the 360 music video, which was a big hit. Guest with Billie Eilish, Wildflower with Billie Eilish. So he's like kind of done a number of these music videos in the last few years that have gone viral, been big deals. And what The Moment is about the moment of September 2024, after the few months right after Brat Summer, which was summer 2024. This album comes out in June and is a huge hit. And Charlie XCX, who had been kind of a B-list pop star, where she's been working in the industry for over a decade and is well known, but she's not huge. But this album completely took off, and she makes music that's for like club EDM, like party music. Like it's not, she's a little bit like Chappell Roan. Like she's like gay famous, and she went from that to being way famous on summer 2024. Brat is huge. It's Brat Summer. Just completely takes the summer by storm. Everyone knows the album, the Chartreuse, and the execs in the fall are now like, how do we keep this going? How do we keep Brat Summer going forever? Brat Forever, next summer, the summer after that, because they've just hit this gold mine and this huge cultural moment. They just are trying to hang on to it. And the question of this tour is coming up. The Brat tour is happening, and there's going to be a concert video taking place. And that's where things start to get a little shifty. People come out of the woodwork. They all have opinions. We have the great Alexander Skarsgård is the director of this concert. He's supposed to be filming the concert, but he starts to get a little bit too hands-on, starts to, you know, question a lot of the creative choices. And that's kind of our setup. But the whole thing is about the insane job that it is to be a pop star, the pressures that you have from the studio, from the businesses, from social media, and trying to navigate all that, being surrounded by yes men who aren't really yes men but don't really have your best interest in mind. Crazy movie, lots to talk about. Zach, what do you think?
So I like The Moment. I'm warm on The Moment. I think it gets a little melodramatic towards the end, because it's a bit more fictional than I'd imagined. I knew it was kind of a mockumentary. I knew it had been filmed in and around this kind of tour she was doing. So I didn't know how, and it looks a lot like The Office or like Succession, like very practical cameras, guys just moving around the room and like doing these like crash zooms and stuff with short lenses. And like, I don't know. I knew it was kind of something, but I didn't know what. And that's part of the appeal of The Moment, right? That, like, you don't know what you're getting into going in. I think if you're a Charlie fan, or like you said, you've got a bunch of friends who know her, then you go with her, and then you kind of have an idea. But like, I was just going in like by myself on a Saturday and didn't really know what I was getting into. Tried to kind of avoid the trailers just because I didn't really know what it was going to be. And I had a great time. I had a great time with The Moment. I think it is odd. I think it is very uniquely shaped. It is parts fictional, parts reality, but reminds me a lot of Inside, the Bo Burnham movie on Netflix. It's about a young musician who is obviously very aware of the internet and what is and isn't cool, and who is feeling insecure. and needs to make some kind of project to feel like, hey, I want to step into what's next in my career. For Burnham, he had taken a long hiatus and then was now making a comedy special. She is on the opposite side. She has just had this huge successful tour and doesn't know what's next. And so you have this weird like seesaw of like fiction reality that both of them seem to play with. While he makes his thing by himself, this is made with a huge team of people and is collaborative. And in fact, that is very much part of the theme of it. Like you said, like what it is to hand over responsibility, how people will make decisions for you if you don't make them, how apathy can punish like a rising artist if they don't move quickly enough on something, like whether or not something is cringe. I don't know, man. I had a great time at the moment. I don't think it's a perfect movie, but it's a great introduction to Charlie XCX for people who don't know her. I had a great time watching it. So let's dig in.
Yeah, it's a little bit like it reminded me of The Office, the classic TV show, where it is, because it's that kind of documentary style where someone will say something stupid or that doesn't make any sense, and everyone just kind of looks at everyone else. There's a whole lot of that. Like I said, Charlie is surrounded by yes men, but also they're also very indecisive. Like there's questions about the tour and the direction and rehearsals and who's involved, and everyone kind of speaks in, no one wants to commit to anything. And so everyone kind of speaks in vagueness, and then like decisions don't get made, and then everything's wrong. And then like people are coming to Charlie, she's going to other people for, information and things. I think she puts on a really great performance, and she is herself, but she also has a lot of kind of more intimate moments. She wrote on her Substack, which of course I follow, about just the insanity that the job of a pop star is. And this sounds like a woe is me issue, but it really is like you have this obviously performances, but then you're being whisked away in SUV to a shoot, to the airport, to a concert. And you're just like it's kind of insane when you sit and think about it compared to the average person with an average job. And it still is work, but it's just like it can make you go crazy. And that's what the kind of chaos that the movie's trying to portray. We get excellent other performances by Alexander Skarsgård as the director Johannes, who's just, he's so Weasley. He's the most annoyed person I've seen on screen in a while. He's so good at this. And we also get some surprises we've seen. This isn't a spoiler. Rachel Sennett shows up for a scene. Kylie Jenner shows up for a scene. Lots of little cameos like that.
Yeah. Let's talk performances. Charlie's great in this movie. I have not seen a lot of her. I've heard a bit of her music. This is the first time I've really seen her acting. As far as I know, she is genuinely funny. She's genuinely engaging, dramatic, emotional when she needs to be. Like, genuinely good. And I see that she is kind of starting to book more roles and starting to get into a little bit more acting. I think that's great. I think she's going to be successful in that. She's really good in this. I love that this, well, Skarsgård real quick, we should speak to him as well. This movie opens with a great montage of music and a kind of explosive, like flash warning sequence that's really great. That gives you a little bit of who Charlie is for people like me who are just walking in and don't know. Where she comes from, the kind of success Brad has had, and where she's at in September 2024 when the movie starts, and then crash to like Charlie at like the airport in like the Delta lounge talking to her boyfriend, and her boyfriend's trying to get her to record this message for this credit card ad. And she's like, isn't that cringe? Shouldn't I not do that? And he's like, well, yeah, it's cringe, but like everything's cringe. It's fine. And like that sets our tone for where we're headed in this movie. Like what is and isn't cool. And Charlie is kind of the arbiter of like, what is sexy and what isn't. And she's surrounded by yes men and boomers and record industry execs who've been doing this for years who don't understand her and don't understand the art of Brad, and they don't get it. And like, she doesn't even really sure if she gets it. She's like, this is just this album I made. So she's got this green slime cover and she's got this like funny font, and they bring in people like Skarsgård who want to change it. And Skarsgård is like the arbiter of cringe. Oh my God. He's the cringiest, oh my God, most awkward dude on purpose. He is like lasered in on what this character needs to be. He's this clunky guy with this like chunky Midwest accent, even though he looks like he just came out of an H&M catalog, and he says his dad's British, but also he grew up in Australia. He's this like man's man of just kind of terrible, who under the surface is not that good of a dude and is trying to wrestle control of the tour and of this kind of film thing away from Celeste, her assistant, who's a very important part of this movie. I played by Haley Gates is her name. We saw her in Uncut Gems. We saw her in, I forget the other movie she was in. And yeah, like Charlie just cannot handle it, and it's all too much. And I love that Charlie is clad in like puffer vests and scarves and these big thick glasses, and her hair's down all the time because she just looks like she's trying to hide from all of it. She's like, all of this sucks. I don't want to do any of this stuff. You know what I mean? And then when she goes to a party, glasses off. When she's hanging out with Celeste and drinking and talking about the creative direction of the tour, glasses off. Hanging out with Rachel Snow, glasses off. Like, so we get these really specific moments of like Charlie being herself versus like trying to get away, you know? And that is kind of just like the two big performances. Then you got like Tim, her assistant, who's like god awful and doesn't listen to her. Okay. And like Rosanna Arquette plays like one of these record execs who like so obviously does not understand or respect what Charlie XCX is trying to do. It just makes for this big boiler pot of tension and misdirection and misguided like creative intent.
Yeah, everyone, again, like her assistant Tim, is so afraid to just commit to anything, say a decision. Like, this is what Charlie wants. This is everyone's like, oh, is that, are we sure about that? Does she? And it's like, well, let's circle back. Let's check. Like, everyone's circling back. No one's making any decisions. And again, that creates the perfect moment for Johannes to kind of come and try to take over this show. And I think it has a little bit of pacing problems. It felt a little slow in the middle. But I did like this big question that it's posing, which is, how do you move on from a great success? How do you do that? And how do you not just try and hang on to that, the moment, forever? And
yeah,
Charlie answers that in a very interesting way with the timing of this movie, because Wuthering Heights comes out this week, of which Charlie XCX did the soundtrack. And so like, how does she move on from Brat? She's doing a film soundtrack. She also, I just saw a trailer earlier for a new movie she's in called Eruptia, which is like a romantic drama set in Poland. Eruptia meaning eruption, because there's a volcano eruption nearby. So that's the big question, because everyone else in the world would try to just hang on to this huge thing, this like once in a lifetime iconic moment. And it's, again, the question of the movie is, how do you move on from that?
I love that the movie is past tense. I love that the movie opens with September 2024, because it's called The Moment. And as we all know, a moment is a fleeting thing, right? It's fast and it's brief. And by walking into this movie in 2026 and seeing 2024, the moment has passed. We're told right up front, this already happened. This is behind us. So Charlie is fighting this battle in this movie to like, to figure out whether or not I kill this thing that I love and let Brat go and end the tour, or if I sign for another 6 months with Amazon Music and make this film tour movie, right? And every record exec who wants a piece of the pie is like, keep it going, Brat forever, right? Get a Brat credit card and put Brat on the back of your phone. And like, meanwhile, everybody like meaningful to Charlie is like, what's next? You know, like, we can tell you're frustrated. We can tell you're stuck. We can tell you're feeling trapped a little bit. Like, obviously, very much in her core, like, I don't know. I think this movie really takes a swing at trying to look at how complicated the industry is and how overwhelming it can be. And it's such a satisfying release when we hit credits to know that everybody who worked on this movie are her close collaborators. Like, this is the guy who's been doing her music videos. Like, that's who directed this. That's who put this together. The camera guys are guys who work on her tour. Like, these are already people she is tight and good with. She did not deal with people like outsiders, like this character, like Skarsgård's character, Johannes, coming in and telling her what to do. Brat did not become this horrible thing that Amazon Music said it had to be. It was always its own thing. And that makes it so special and so sincere. You're not making art for other people. You're making it because it's what you want to make. And if other people like it, then they'll go for it. It's profound. It is, like I said, a little melodramatic. Definitely, there's a stint right in around Act 2, Act 3, where you're like, okay, I can kind of see the lines of where this is going, and I'm ready for this to start wrapping up. It's much more mainstream. It's much more just kind of fictional film than I'd expected. I really thought it was going to be more rooted in reality, and it kind of is. But like, at some point, you realize like, we're all doing performances here. Yeah, like, these are not quite as real as they're maybe presented to be. But then you get some funny fourth wall breaks too. There's some funny looks at the cameras. Hey, what's with the documentary crew in here? Oh, they're just filming a thing for me. Yeah, like, reminds me of The Office. Reminds me a lot of Succession on HBO, and this in the way with the roaming cameras and the following very wealthy people in like vans around, right? Like, she's getting carted around the world.
Yeah, it's the setup is based in reality, and then kind of moving forward is where it turns into mockumentary, turns more takes a more fictional turn. And again, it's looking at the stress, the pressures, the who are your friends, who aren't, who's on your side, who can you trust, and then just the whole personal image. How do I look? How you know, my like one time she's, my skin's like terrible today. You know, there's all these things that these kinds of people are, you know, the kind of pressures they face. So
yeah,
interesting stuff.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with Brad. It's not perfect, for sure. It's not for everybody. And notably, not enough music. Like, if there's one thing I wish I could have changed, I wish there was about 5 more Charlie XCX tracks in here. Like, I think she does most of the music for the movie, but it's much more like film composing stuff. It's different. It's new. It's not stuff that you would expect. Not just the same hits, but also, man, there's an opening montage in this that's just so fire. And I'm like, oh, dude, I could have done a whole concert movie that looked like this. Yeah. And that's not what Brad is. It's not what the moment is. It's something different. I think that's good. Any other thoughts or recommendations?
I'm ready.
Andy, would you recommend The Moment?
I'd recommend it to fans of Charlie XCX or fans of pop music. And if that's something you're interested in and know a lot about, I think you're going to have a good time. If you're an outsider, I think it might be a little bit strange. It is still, like I said, it's insightful and it is profound on kind of the themes that it's exploring. But I think it's definitely for the fans.
Yeah, I would recommend The Moment, actually. I had a lot of fun with it. I think it's weird. I think it's an indie title. It reminds me a lot of, like, Bo Burnham's Inside on Netflix. Reminds me a lot of, like, HBO's Succession. It is a story about a young artist who is, like, struggling to figure out what's next. Charlie's a breakout. I think she has a lot of potential in movies. She should keep doing more movie stuff. And music as well, obviously. And, yeah, that's The Moment. Man, we got to talk about trailers. We got to talk about some new trailers we saw this weekend, thanks to one particular big sporting event. What do we call this segment, Andy?
It's time for the trailer park. Of course, the big game is a time for lots of commercials, and also usually when we get some new trailers for things coming out. And we didn't really get anything. Well, we did get a couple of new things, but we also got more of things we've seen. The first one was a new trailer for Project Hail Mary, which has given away, if you don't want to know anything about the movie, it's going to be hard not to, but it kind of shows a lot of things. It got me a little bit more interested in this. I was a little lukewarm on this project. I'm still a little worried that it's going to be a big sci-fi bomb, as sci-fi is super risky sometimes. That comes out March 20th. I'm still excited to see, or I'm more excited to see this now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Project Hail Mary. I read the book, so it's easy for me to say, hey, it's going to be a great time, but I think it'll be fun. I think it's probably going to underperform. We were talking about this a little bit the other night. I don't know who's going to go see this movie. Amazon spent like $150 million on it. And part of the problem with like the premise of Hail Mary is it's basically one astronaut the whole movie. There's a big reveal at the end of Act 1 that is, people are trying not to get spoiled, but Amazon's kind of just pushed past that in the marketing. So don't worry too much about it. I think just go see it. Even the author endorsed it. And there's a lot of flashback stuff, but like, it's just a hard movie to sell. Like it's practically in a lot of ways, it's practically a bottle feature. So like, I don't know. I hope it makes some noise and people go see it. I like the crew on it. Greg Frazier shot it, for God's sake. So that's Hail Mary. Mandalorian and Grogu, big game spot. Yeah, man. So you saw a spot for the Mandalorian and Grogu. You might remember this. You might have heard about it. It's really simple. It is not a trailer from the film. It doesn't feature any footage from the film. We have our Mandalorian and his little sidekick Grogu riding on some kind of like hover car carriage and getting dragged by like 4 Tauntauns through the snow. It's shot like an old Budweiser ad, or like it's supposed to be, you know, like American, like the Super Bowl or something. And then it like pulls back and like the Star Wars music kicks in. Bum, ba, ba, da, surprise. It's the Mandalorian Grogu. It's definitely not Pedro Pascal under that helmet. I promise. He was too expensive.
Yeah.
That is a stunt double. Regardless, like Mandalorian Grogu logo reveal coming soon. That comes out. I feel like this one's been getting some real negative buzz. A lot of people saying this has no confidence in the feature. Disney came out, or Dave Filoni came out and said, well, it was supposed to be a cheeky thing that kind of hinted at the history of the big game.
Commercials.
Yeah, right. As well as with this, like, Mandalorian Grogu's in a weird place. What do you think?
Yeah, again, just bizarre commercial reminiscent of the Budweiser Clydesdales, which was a classic 90s big game commercial. It's it's a decent idea, but also it feels like there's no new footage. Like, we haven't seen anything new from The Mandalorian in quite some time, and I was hoping we'd get something new. So I don't know. We were speculating before on what this is going to do. I think it could make Solo money, that previous Star yeah. Wars, which actually would probably be a success, which that film made almost $400 million, but was seen as a big disappointment. Next big TV spot was one for Disclosure Day, which is the new Steven Spielberg sci-fi movie starring Emily Blunt and Josh O'Connor.
Josh O'Connor, yeah.
This movie continues to only look better and look really cool. Still don't really know what it's about, other than maybe unveiling that aliens walk among us. There's some sort of body snatcher aspect going on too. Some cool stuff. There's a brief view of some sort of spaceship coming through the clouds. And I was like, this is absolute cinema. Like, that kind of like Spielberg still got it. I'm more excited for this than I was. Looks great.
I know. This is such a film nerd movie, like co-starring Colin Firth and Coleman Domingo. It's the new Spielberg alien movie. Come on. Who doesn't love a good Steven Spielberg alien movie? Guy made Close Encounters? Guy made Raiders? Guy made Jaws? Like, come on. We love a Spielberg alien movie. So, yeah, we don't know a lot about it. But, yeah, another look. Some new footage, I think, in there. You know, don't go peek if you want to go going fresh. But it's mostly just a teaser. Nothing too crazy. Speaking of teaser, another one here. This one was odd, and people told me this was historic, and this is the way it used to be. So Andy can confirm he's seen a couple more big games than I have. Minions and Monsters gets a teaser. This is the new Illumination feature, right? Like, who is just about to put out Super Mario Galaxy movie with Nintendo, and they're going to make over $1 billion on that. I think this is probably $600 million, $800 million feature we're looking at. Like, this movie's going to make so much money. It's a new Minions movie, right? You know the Minions. I don't have to tell you. This was a teaser, right? It features a Minion running at the screen for 20 seconds and then, like, exasperatedly encouraging the viewer, a child, I would presume, to go online and watch the full trailer for Minions and Monsters. Available now. Went and checked the trailer. Full trailer is like kids stuff. The Minions work in Hollywood now, and they want to make a Minion and Monster movie, but they need movie monsters, and they figure out a way to summon them, and so they start summoning monsters into the real world, and they got to deal with it. It looks delightful. It looks fantastic. Oh my god, I think every kid in the world is going to go see that movie. Looks like another hit, right? Minions and Monsters. Love it. What I wanted to ask Andy was this history of teasers being up and then telling you to go online and watch the full trailer. I guess that used to be a thing more. I don't really remember it. I just felt like if they had 30 seconds, it's $10 million for every 30 seconds of the Super Bowl. Just show me the ad, you know, don't show me a signpost that tells me to go watch the ad, but maybe that's backwards thinking.
I think it really depends, because some of the other brands or non-film brands would do this sort of thing of they'd have some sort of advertisement and then be like, check us out online. It's usually reserved for products or cars or other things. So it's not unheard of to do it for a movie, but yeah, usually you want to get some sort of spot. You want to get, you know, something to see that the kids saw the Minions on during the big game. We totally have to go see that. So it's an interesting strategy. This movie's going to kill. Like, the Illumination just knows how to make these movies. They make $1 billion every time.
Yeah. In the early 2000s, Pixar was the King Midas of children's animation. Every movie they came out with was solid gold. Illumination, I think, is quickly moving to that spot. This movie's going to make so much money. Yeah. Super Mario's going to make so much money. Good God. One more to talk about briefly, one more serious one, then a quick look at some bogus trailers. We got to talk about The Adventures of Cliff Booth. So this was a surprise. This came early in the program and hilariously has not officially been released by Netflix as of this recording. So every version I have of this, every version has been re-uploaded by movie trailer pages like Joe Blow and IGN are all in like 240p, including ours. So you got what you got. That being said, we got to look at The Adventures of Cliff Booth, the new David Fincher film coming to Netflix, script by Quentin Tarantino. It's follow-up to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's film a few years ago. Tarantino wrote the script, didn't want to direct, but reportedly, from what I hear, was basically hanging out on set right next to Fincher throughout filming of all of this. So I suppose that makes him a producer. This features Brad Pitt as Cliff Booth in the 70s, who is getting up to some trouble. It's dark, it's dimly lit, just like a Fincher movie. And hilariously, all of the salacious parts of the film, any middle fingers or cursing, have been covered up with this goofy, like, film scratch censor effect right out of Fight Club. Great choice. And interestingly, no title reveal at the end of this or date. We don't know when this is coming. We just know it's coming 2026. We get a big banner that says coming soon right out of the 70s. And that's the trailer for The Adventures of Cliff Booth. What do you know about it, Andy?
It's definitely big on vibes, not big on plot. We don't really get a lot of revelation about what Cliff Booth is doing. To just refresh people's memories, Tarantino worked out an interesting deal where he will retain the rights to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in like 25 years, but he retained the right to use the characters in other projects. So this is technically not a sequel because legally they can't call it that. You have a different main character. It's not Leonardo DiCaprio. It is Cliff Booth. Strange thing. Yeah, it looks... I need to see more. Again, lots of it is censored. We have no idea what the plot is. Cliff Booth just seems to find himself into dangerous situation after dangerous situation. I mean, I have to watch it. You have to. It's Fincher and Tarantino working together. But I can't wait to see more.
Yeah, same. I don't know a lot about it, but I'm looking forward to it. Big surprise. And yeah, strange rollout. No title card, no date reveal, no upload from the company making it. Still does not exist on the internet. We just have rips. But they haven't copyright strike the rips, so they're still up. Like, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing over there. Anyway, I want to talk about a couple of just like really quick inspired by cinema trailers, that really were just kind of slop, man. Because there was some real slop at the game this year. Mostly AI, mostly like weight loss products, right? Some tech company junk that nobody wants. And that was really kind of the domineering thing going on. I don't remember like a cheeky McDonald's ad. I don't remember like a fun Doritos ad. It was all like, try out my new AI platform. And like celebrities. God, they had celebrities hawking everything. There's four in particular that I want to talk about here on the podcast, though. Number one, the Yorgos Lanthimos, Emma Stone, Squarespace ad. We had heard after Begonia came out that the two of them were collaborating on an ad. And after that, Emma Stone was, I think, going to take a break from acting for a minute. I think she said she wants to take a year off or something, or maybe just take a break from working with Yorgos. But regardless, we get a black and white trailer, Emma Stone in a very odd house in a very odd coast, trying to buy a domain for the website, emmastone.com, can't get it. She just can't make it happen. Ends up like blowing out a huge fire and throwing her device in it. It's like dimly lit and strange. And hilariously, like I pointed out to Andy before we got started here, it's like a 2-minute trailer and Squarespace only paid for 30 seconds of it. Cause it would have been like, you know, $10 million every 30. Like some, it just felt like they made this big thing and then somebody at Squarespace got scared and was like, I'm not actually going to pay to run all of that on TV because it is so odd and strange and like new wave. But, you know, for film heads out there, it's kind of cool. They did a Squarespace ad, I guess. Have you seen it, Andy?
Yeah, it reminded me of Poor Things. It looks in black and white, so it's like Poor Things, but an ad for Squarespace. Memorable, but I feel like most people won't get the joke. Like film nerds will definitely be like, oh yeah, that's totally his look and his aesthetic. And of course, working with Emma Stone, and it's, but the average person isn't going to really understand where it comes from.
I think the thing they never say in ads for Squarespace and God, another one I was thinking of, like just website builders, they're all on monthly subs now. It used to be like a decade ago, like you could arguably buy like some kind of annual package at Squarespace or something. And that would get you started, or buy a template and then build your site and then you pay your domain separately. But like, dude, they have crazy monthly fees. And every time I see an ad for one of these, that's what I think of now. It's like, how would you feel about paying $25 a month to keep a website online? Like it's, I don't know. Maybe that's not unreasonable. You work in web, you'd know better than I do, but gross. It just does not feel as cool as it used to. It actually feels kind of awful to me. Let's talk about Adrian Brody real quick and this Intuit TurboTax spot. So this is called The Expert featuring Adrian Brody. It's a spot that kind of features Adrian walking into a TurboTax office and having kind of a big dramatic freak out. And then the director says, cut, 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 and comes out on set. Hey, Adrian, we're not actually doing that big. We're not going that big anymore. It's riffing on Adrian Brody giving big emotional performances. That's the bit. This is one of our celebrity heavy ones. The only thing I really wanted to talk about here the beginning of it just kind of rips off Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like wholesale. There's this scene of like Adrian Brody in his trailer, like riffing to his mirror, like how he's going to deliver his lines. And like, it is lit so closely to the Rick Dalton freakout scene with Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, when he like runs into his trailer and like throws his whiskey at the wall and gets all mad at himself. He's even looking the same way at the mirror. Like, it just feels like one of these nods to movies that I was like, you know what? I'll write this down. This seems like something worth talking about in the pod. Here I am talking about it. Did you see this one?
So I saw this actually in front of The Moment, because I watched that during the Super Bowl, or during the big game rather. And I saw a much longer ad. It's like 2 minutes. It's the same joke, just longer of like, he's very serious and he's, you know, when does the crying start? You know, when does the pain begin? For some reason, the internet version of this has heavy like CGI or like face filters on it for some reason.
Yeah, he got not in the photo filtered. It looks terrible.
Yeah, it's not like that in the ad that I saw in the theater. But yeah, for some reason, the internet one is really bad.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was just looking at screenshots here. I was like, this looks like the lines on this look very particular compared to everything else, but you know what? It's fine. Jurassic Park Xfinity. So you might have seen this before the game actually happened. This came out a week earlier. Verizon released an ad themed around Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park, featuring some stars of the original film who were recreating scenes from Jurassic Park where infamously the technology goes down in the park, network goes down. And then the T-Rex can get out and all the alarms stop working, and that's all the pandemonium. Well, had Xfinity been around, Verizon proposes, none of that would have happened, right? The system would have stayed on. Things would have worked fine. We would have had a great time at the park. We could look at Sam Neill, brutally de-aged as Dr. Alan Grant, who's like hanging out and taking photos and riding amusement park rides. This is the best park ever, he says. Laura Dern, who looks a bit better, I think, as, I can't remember her character's name now. Running around with dinosaurs, having a good time. Ellie Sattler. Jeff Goldblum, who looks the absolute worst, who is just doing goofy Jeff Goldblum lines, right? That he's been doing his whole career. Weird, man. Weird nostalgia ad. Weird member berries ad featuring Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park and also Verizon. I guess fun, I guess.
Yeah, again, this is a category that I'm now calling nostalgia slop, because, again, they cut in real footage from Jurassic Park, and then you have our aging stars who are back in, you know, they put them in costume, they de-age them. It's silly, but I was like, I mean, if you remember that, I mean, you're going to be in your 40s and 50s, so it's nostalgia, but it's, again, that's hitting a much older crowd these days, which also is true for the next one, the Goodwill Duncan TV spot, which is a riff on Goodwill Hunting starring Ben Affleck. But it's not just Goodwill Hunting. It's also this, it's a parody of a 90s TV show. And you have a bunch of 90s TV stars like Alfonso Ribeiro from The Fresh Prince, Jaleel White, who was Steve Urkel, a number of others, and it's shot in 4:3 TV, a TV ratio. It's in that kind of made up set. And again, it's just more nostalgic. Again, it's about donuts. I forgot. It's Duncan. But she's like, what are we doing? Who is this for? It's like, and the one thing that one of my latest hot takes is that nostalgia is poison and will trap you in the past, which is the message of Matrix 4, by the way, just to throw that in there.
Yeah, no. And look, if I look at a Dunkin' Donuts ad that looks like this, I definitely think of nostalgia being poison. This ad's terrible. This is the worst one the whole time. I don't think it's the most flagrantly AI, because there were some that were like horrifically bad. There was one like Svedka vodka ad that just looked terrible. There's a stupid crypto ad with the Backstreet Boys karaoke. But this one I think is the most flagrant because it uses recognizable faces. And tells you their names and tells you very specifically, this is supposed to be Ben Affleck. That's supposed to be George Costanza. Yeah, this is supposed to be Alfonso Ribeiro. And you're just like, oh no. And like, I don't know how they did it. I think it's all AI. Like, if I understand it correctly, it's all AI. But I thought maybe they were shooting with body doubles and doing deepfakes or something. Or maybe that really is Affleck moving around on a set and they just cleaned up his face. Like, I don't know. It's
I mean,
real
Matt
bad.
LeBlanc looks like
please
a PS5 yes. character.
It please don't ever please don't ever make these again. I do like that they have gaff tape over the Boston Bruins logo on his shirt for his jacket for some reason. Like that makes me think that's not AI would not have known to do that. Like so they probably shot this with a real person and then just like put his like deep faked his face on there. Like I don't know how they did it, but like bad. It's bad. No more of this. Yeah, man, that's the big game. Are we cooked? Is the big game cooked? Because I feel like the trailers this year were worse than ever. Like they just weren't that good. The movie trailers we got were fine. We missed a lot of trailers for like things that actually are tangible physical resources and were most just like tech ads, right? Big tech seems to be here. Like they seem to manage a lot of the economy and that seems to be reflected in the advertising on the biggest stage in the world. What do you think?
I mean, it used to be such a cultural moment where you would have these incredible ads. I remember the night, like the Clydesdale, the Budweiser Clydesdales, and like Doritos had a classic one, and you wouldn't see them until the day of the game. Now, half the ads come out a week or so before the big game, and you can see it all online. You can see it before it comes out. At that being said, apparently it was still the highest viewed big game of all time, 133 million people. So I don't know how that translates into viewership for these movies and these products, but it's still, I mean, people are still buying these $10 million ads.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to hold up. I mean, obviously the price is the price and it's about perception, but like, dude, I don't know. I just felt like these are not it. Like, I think the shine and the, like the luster of like, it's a Super Bowl ad, so it's going to be good, is going away. I think the joke of like, oh, I'm just watching for the commercials is dying. Like, cause the commercials aren't that good anymore. And what you do see, like, aren't that interesting. There's a couple of good ones, but like, I remember missing the Super Bowl and waking up the next day and Googling like best Super Bowl ads and getting like listicles, right? Of like, here's the top 15 ads you got to watch. Oh my God. Red letter. And like, yeah, it's just less that now. So I don't know. It is what it is, I guess. This is what getting old is. You just think everything new is not cool and needs to go back to the way
it used. Well, it's not new. It's just nostalgia from 30 years ago.
Yeah, you're right. Like it's just Danson reheated food.
Is in that ad doing a Cheers bit. That show's from the 80s. Like, what are we doing here?
It's weird. I know. Seinfeld's in here. Who is... Whatever. Anyway, we got to move on, man. Speaking of nostalgia, we need to talk about one other feature on the podcast this week. Very excited to talk about this. I'm going to be taking the summary. So here it is. This is Richard Linklater's Blue Moon. So Blue Moon is a small feature of Richard Linklater's, came out last year. We missed it. Excited to talk about it now. This stars Ethan Hawke in an award-nominated performance as Lorenzo Hart, who is effectively a washed-up musician. The movie opens the night of his musical opening, Oklahoma, which you might have heard of, very popular musical. He leaves thinking this show is terrible and I don't like it at all, and heads to Sardi's, his local bar, where all of the critics are going to be arriving in just an hour or so when the play is over, along with his musician co-writer, Rogers. God, I cannot remember my man's first name.
Rogers.
Richard Rogers, played by Andrew Scott. We arrive at the bar, and that is where we hang out for the whole movie. Ethan Hawke plays Lorenzo Hart, like I said at the top, who is a very eccentric man, stands at only 5 foot tall, hilariously movie magicked into being short. Ethan Hawke is 5'10 in reality. A lot of good sight gags at short Lorenzo Hart, who is hanging out with his local bartender, Bobby Cannavale, talking about his career, reflecting on his past, what's next. And, of course, this very exciting young college girl who's just come in, played by Margaret Qualley, who he has had a little bit of an interest with in the past, is hoping tonight might be the night that he and her seal the lovely deal, I guess. If the play goes good and the critics are nice and things with Rogers work out, maybe things will work out for Lorenzo Hart, or maybe not. The movie is Blue Moon. Andy, what'd you think?
So I struggled a little bit with this movie, but it grew on me the longer it went. And just to clarify a little bit of things about the plot. So Lorenz Hart had worked with Richard Rogers for 25 years. They worked really well together, had written a lot of classic songs, but had kind of had a falling out because of Hart's, basically his substance abuse and how he worked. He would drink a lot, would party a lot, stay out right? Hard to work, a man, very talented man, hard to work with. He did not write Oklahoma, and he's not part of Oklahoma, but he's there. He's part of the community, and it's a bit of a Star Is Born situation where his star is falling as Richard Rodgers has just had his big hit with Oscar Hammerstein. Rodgers and Hammerstein, of course, would go on to become a household name. So he's kind of seen his career coming to an end. Possibly he's seen his student surpass him, and it's a real tough pill to swallow. But there's hope. There's hope that he might patch things up. That he, you know, he has this idea for this incredible new musical, this Marco Polo thing. It's going to be bold. It's not going to be. You know, he's kind of criticizing Oklahoma for being audience slop, what we would call today. It's a crowd pleaser. It's simple. It's funny, but it's a huge hit. It's a massive hit, and he's struggling with this. And he's kind of his own worst enemy. He's like I said, very difficult to work with. The substance abuse, and basically everyone has moved on without him because of this, and he just kind of can't swallow his pride and can't change his ways to recover. And Ethan Hawke does an incredible job. When I saw that he was nominated, I kind of rolled my eyes and I was like, well, you know, he's kind of an institution. And then I saw it and I was like, no, he might be doing the best work of any of the nominees, but because this is a small movie, he's probably not winning, but incredible performance by him.
Yeah. Somebody said once that Richard Linklater makes a great hangout movie, right? It's a movie you just wish you could hang out in. And that's exactly where Blue Moon is. Like, we are just hanging out at this bar the whole movie, like with Lorenz Hart, who is a man, everybody calls him Larry, who is a well-meaning guy, but is very odd and does not fit into society like other people think. He's a little not the most attractive man to look at. He's got a pretty poor hairline, pretty bad comb over. Like I said, he's a short guy. And I got a high-pitched voice. People get funny reads on his sexuality. They can't tell which way he kind of leans. Which, by the way, is aired out very early in the movie. It's nice. We get to hang out with him for like 90 minutes. We just get to hang out with this guy. And I think that's divisive. It's a dialogue-heavy script. It's character-heavy for sure, a lot like Linklater's picks. But I think if you don't like Hart, if you don't like what Ethan Hawke, who his character is in this movie, I think you're going to have a terrible time. But I think like a few of the patrons at the bar who kind of warm up to him over the course of the film, as you kind of get pulled in, you kind of get tugged under the spell of what Hawke is doing in here and this script. It was like a lofty, lofty script talking about, you know, great playwrights and great art and culture and what it means to really make something meaningful versus like just popular with other people. An interesting reflection of the moment, actually, which we just talked about. I fell into it. I fell into what was going on here. Like, I fell into the character and I liked what was happening. I ended up having a good time. I think it's hurt because it doesn't physically go anywhere. Like, you are kind of trapped at Sardi's for sure. Like, you move around in there a bit, you get a couple settings. I think it's a two-story bar. You're seen in a coat room later, but for the most part, that's the movie. And I think that combined with Linklater's other film last year, Nouvelle Vogue, very strange, very niche, I think just keeps a lot of modern audiences just a bit out in the cold. Like, they just don't get what's happening.
Yeah, like I said, I struggled with the first act because it's basically just him chatting with the bartender played by Bobby Cannavale, and he's just kind of musing about life and Oklahoma and the writing musicals, and it is, he carries the entire movie. He is in every single scene. End of act one is when the party after Oklahoma arrives, and that's when Richard Rodgers arrives, Hammerstein,
Oscar Hammerstein,
other people.
Yeah.
Margaret Qualley's Elizabeth Wayland. We meet her briefly. She gets a bigger moment in act three. So to me, the longer it goes, the more it reveals, and reveals more about their situation. Like this, his very kind of difficult relationship with Richard Rodgers now, that's very strained. And of course, he wrote some amazing tunes that are staples of like jazz and early musical American theater. But now, again, he's kind of on his way out. He's being forgotten because he's just too hard to work with, and he doesn't want to do what's popular. And again, he's his own worst enemy.
It's a funny movie that couches itself in a funny place in time, because when you start the movie, you assumedly don't know anything about them, and you get a scene pretty much right at the beginning of the movie that gives you a title card and a bit of history over a kind of harrowing setting for one of our characters right before the movie slides into kind of where we are now at the bar at Oklahoma. And then we head into the bar. And that gives you just a bit of cushion to let you know that, like you said, this is a bit of a Star Is Born thing. Rodgers and Hammerstein are well known all over the world. Nobody remembers Rodgers and Hart. Like Hart just kind of got lost in the dust. He wrote some features for sure, but nothing big. And so over the course of the movie, as we learn more about him, we learn more about his career. We also get pulled in on this journey with Hart because Hart is on the come up, hopefully, right? The pitch is that, hey, I've got a party happening at my house in like 2 hours. You should come by, which is weird because you'd think somebody having a party at their house would probably be busy planning the party. But Hart says he's got one, and Bobby Cannavale, his bartender, kind of believes it. He has kicked drinking, right? He was having substance abuse problems, like Andy mentioned, but he's now kind of over it. And very late in the movie, he says, hey, can you fix a shot and put it in front of me? And I'm just going to look at it, right? I'm not going to drink it. I'm just going to look at it. Hey, I've got this girl coming by that I met. You're going to love her. She's a blonde bombshell, right? She's going to be great. She'll be here in an hour. The movie does, it sets all these little breadcrumbs up for you to follow down these sort of trails. And like over 90 minutes hanging out and getting to know Lorenzo Hart and Hawk's really illustrious performance is a delight. Looking forward to Quali coming in and seeing where that's going to go. You know, finding out a little bit more about this author character who's hanging out in the booth just behind Hart, who he swears he's read before but can't say when. That stuff pulls me in. I had a great time with this. It was a movie. I fixed a beverage while I was drinking watching, so it was nice just kind of sit at the bar and sip with them a little bit. Like, I had a good time. Regarding performances, Hawk is tremendous. I think you're right. It's probably one of the best of the year. It's probably one of the best of his career. I can't believe how good he is in this. Quali is, like, fine and isn't in the movie much. She looks like she's playing really young. I remember earlier in the movie they said she was like 20, and I think later she dispels that or something. They explain that, no, she's not actually 20 years old. That would be a stretch. Andrew Scott is as Rodgers is not great. He's the one that I was like, ooh, linchpin performance. There's only like 3 or 4 big ones in here, and he can barely hide the accent. He's fine. He's really stiff. And he seems to really believe that, like, hey, what the public thinks is what's going to be great. And Lorenzo Hart is on the opposite side of that. No. Like, what you think is going to be great is what's going to be great because you're an artist, you know, and has this, like, funny sense of resolve. Meanwhile, the two of them, like I said, really, really funny movie magic, height magic in there. Lorenzo Hart is 5 foot tall. All of Ethan Hawke's clothes are, like, sized up. He's constantly framed low with, like, a lot of headroom above him. And then when him and Rodgers are together, Rodgers is like 3 or 4 inches taller than him, even though in reality, Andrew Scott's 5'8" and Hawk is 5'10". So that is all movie magic. Like, and it works great. Like all as a punchline often he's framed shorter than Quali. Like they, I don't know. There's something in here going on with Linklater that I really like, but it is a bottle feature for sure.
Yeah. I was going to say Margaret Qualley's character. It's a bit of a reflection of the situation. Lorenz Hart, he is hoping on a lot of potential with her. He's hoping that they're going to be a thing, an item, and we know from the beginning that's not going to happen, and we watch this whole thing. We would just watch multiple opportunities just sort of slip through his fingers, and it's largely his own fault, his own doing, and it's a metaphor for a lot of those things. I didn't mind Andrew Scott. I thought he's great as kind of this. He's someone who's kind of, he's not charmed by Hart anymore. He's kind of had enough of him. He's like, he just wants to talk business because he's like, you know, maybe we could do a revival of one of our old things. You can write some new songs. And Hart just wants to talk about Marco Polo and this new thing. And he's like, no, I'm not really interested in that. And he keeps pushing it. And they both push each other. They're like, no, I don't like that idea. No, I don't like your idea. But Rodgers is in, like, he's the golden boy now. And he has the upper hand in this.
You're right. They do have an awkward kind of first encounter at the bar when Rodgers shows up and like all these critics come in after him. Oh my God, you're amazing. And Hart like sucks it up. All right, I better go play the part, right? And like they kind of have an awkward encounter. But then like they meet on a stairwell and they have a bit of a soft one. And yeah, Rodgers tells him, hey, you know what? Like I wouldn't be who I am without you. Like you have brought me so much, Larry, and I'm going to love you forever for sure. But then he goes a little too far and he says something about Oklahoma and they just start to twist and they get into this sort of argument together. Like it's a real great scene. Like, and the two of them play across each other. Well, I just thought, I don't know. I just kept something about Scott, but I like him fine. I don't know. I who is this movie for? Like theater
fans? Definitely for cinema. Yeah. It's for cinema heads.
Yeah, it's an indulgent, it's an indulgent sort of movie. I think a lot like Nouvelle Vogue. Like Linklater is like, in 2025, I'm making movies for me. Like I'm making stuff that I want to watch. I don't care if you're interested or not. Like I'm making the stuff that I like, and I think it's a cool sort of movie. It's small, and I like that. Like, you know, it would have been easy for the movie to set up Lorenzo Hart getting crushed in Act Three by the young blonde bombshell who doesn't actually want him in the way he thinks. But that's not it, because when they actually get together, like, he turns out he's not just trying to sleep with her. Like, he genuinely sees her as this sort of like window into a world, a perspective that he can't really get to. She tells this great story about this guy that she's crazy about, and he is totally enraptured by it. They're just leaning all the way in. Hawk loves it. Like, he's chewing the scenery. Like, I don't know, there's some magic happening in Blue Moon. It's subtle. It doesn't move around a lot, but it's there. And I think it works because of Hawk. Like, really. And yeah. Anyway, I'm running out of good things to say. Anything else on this one?
I think I'm ready.
Andy, would you recommend Blue Moon?
I'd recommend it to cinema fans. If you're a fan, if you've been keeping up with the Oscars, the Oscar nominations, an independent film, you're down for it. Like an acting masterclass, I think it's definitely for you. Mainstream audiences, I think, would struggle with this a little bit. It's a little slow in the beginning. It takes place all in one place. It's almost like a stage play in a lot of ways, but I think the performances are really good. This kind of Star is Born situation, you're seeing someone fail their star fall while someone else is rising, is really interesting. A lot of like lessons of how someone can be their own worst enemy. So recommended for cinema fans.
Yeah, I like Blue Moon. I think you should check it out. It's odd, and it's oddly shaped, and it's a bottle movie, and it doesn't really go to a bunch of big illustrious settings or anything, but it's really, really great performances, and it's a great hangout movie. It's a great, like, kickback late at night. If this was on TV at 1 in the morning, I'd throw it on and watch it. You know what I mean? Like, just, it's good. Small, it's humble. Check out Blue Moon. And, man, that's Off Script, episode 325. Come and gone, done and dusted. What are we watching next week, Andy?
So we're going to be taking a look at Wuthering Heights. It's finally here, the new Emerald Fennell film, her adaptation of Wuthering Heights, starring Jacob Elordi and, of course, the great Margot Robbie. That will be coming out this Valentine's weekend. Perfect to celebrate that. Maybe. I'm not super familiar with the thing. Some early reviews. Early reviews are all over the place. I'm looking forward to this because I think Emerald Fennell has a lot of potential. So I want to continue to give her a chance because I think she has the potential to make really great art. So we're going to be looking forward to that. And then also, some other things coming out, Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, the new Gore Verbinski sci-fi film with Sam Rockwell. And then we're going to be taking a look at maybe some other streaming things at that. But definitely Wuthering Heights for next week.
Yeah, bit of a programming note. I think Andy already mentioned it. We're probably releasing next week's episode on Wednesday as opposed to the usual Tuesday. I've just got this big work thing that just kind of came up last minute, and I want to make sure I got time to watch everything. I really want to check out Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, Gore Verbinski, Pirates of the Caribbean, right? Has not made a movie in like a decade or something. Like, it's probably going to be lame and not cool, but like, I don't know. I'm a little curious. Looks a little bit like Everything Everywhere All at Once, but if we don't end up seeing it this week, maybe we'll catch it down the road. Wuthering Heights, for sure. That is the movie of the weekend. We will check it out when we can. If you enjoyed the episode today, if you like what we're doing here on Offscript Film Review, want to support the show, best way you can do that is just subscribe to the show or comment on the show or like a post from the show. Any engagement, man, anything at all. If you can engage multiple times, that'd be great. A like and a comment would be nuts. A share would be crazy. Subscribe would go great. But that's it. Yeah, just engage with the show in some fashion. It's free, costs you nothing, helps us out a ton. Check out the show. Check out Offscript Film Review on YouTube at Offscript Film Review. Check out our social media, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. Audio listeners, you can check out the Ears edition of Offscript Film Review every week at Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, iHeartMedia. Check out our website, offscriptfilmreview.com, and leave us correspondence directly. Mailbag content from you to us. Might even read it live on the show. mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. From all of us at Offscript, the home of Bold Cinema, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.